Good morning. You're listening to 88.7 WHCL FM, Clinton, New York. I'm your host, Pete Bianco. This show is titled The Ringer, and my guest this morning is Herb Smith. You might remember him from broadcasts of last year, Utikins for 9/11 Truth. And this morning we have a different subject. Herb, you want to give us a little summary of what it will be today?
Yeah, basically what it'll be about will be about the fact that during the 80s, Mena, Arkansas, which is a rural community of about 5,000 in western Arkansas, was an operations base for the Iran-Contra affair.
All right, and so you brought a clip with you. We're going to play a clip of Bill Clinton speaking. And who is it that's questioning him, and what is the forum for the questions?
This is Sarah McClendon questioning Bill Clinton. I'd imagine it would be at a presidential press conference.
Okay, so we'll play that.
Sir, the Republicans are trying to blame you for the existence of a small air base at Mena, Arkansas. This base was set up by George Bush and Oliver North and the CIA to help the Iran-Contras, and they brought in plane load after plane load of cocaine there for sale in the United States. And then they took the money and bought weapons and took them back to the Contras, all of which was illegal, as you know, under the Boland Act. But tell me, did they tell you that this had to be in existence because of national security?
Well, let me answer the question. No, they didn't tell me anything about it. They didn't say anything to me about it. The airport in question and all the events in question were the subject of state and federal inquiries. It was primarily a matter for federal jurisdiction. The state really had next to nothing to do with it. The local prosecutor did conduct an investigation based on what was within the jurisdiction of state law. The rest of it was under the jurisdiction of the United States attorneys who were appointed successively by previous administrations. We had nothing, zero, to do with it, and everybody who's ever looked into it knows that.
Okay, tell us about what we just heard.
So that was Sarah McClendon asking Clinton about his knowledge of the drug running and cocaine smuggling into Mena, Arkansas when he was governor.
Okay.
Basically, I'll get into it. There's more associated with that. So basically, she mentioned it was guns out, drugs and money back. But associated with that operation, it was an operations base for the Iran-Contra affair. Associated with the operation, you also have illegal arms manufacturing, and you'll have money laundering. And when the Clintons are around, there'll be a few MENA-related deaths associated with it also, which, of course, she didn't mention any of that.
Now, for listeners who are not familiar with the Iran-Contra affair, could you just give a brief background about it?
Yeah, originally, you had we supported the Contras, who were under supported Somoza in Nicaragua for years, and then when Carter came, he turned his back on Somoza, and the Sandinistas had an uprising under Ortega, and the Sandinistas got control of the country, and then it was legal to support the Contras, but as she mentioned, the Boland Act or the Boland Amendment, then it became illegal to fund the Contras. So what we ended up doing, as many people talk about, was called the October Surprise. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Mm. And that alleges that Bill Casey and George Bush Sr. cut a deal with the Iranians when they had our 52 hostages. And they cut a deal that said don't release the hostages until after the election results to help get Reagan in. So that's where it started. And what we did is after that, as part of the deal, we supplied the after they released them on the day Reagan was inaugurated. And then what happened was the U.S. had sold weapons to the Iranians. And then the Contra part of it, and we diverted those funds from the weapon sales to the Iranians to arming the Contras. And, of course, this was all illegal, this was illegal under the Boland Amendment.
Okay.
And George Bush claims he was out of the loop of the Iran-Contra affair, but he ended up, when he left, he pardoned just about everybody involved in it. And It's hard to believe that a former CIA director had no knowledge of a covert drug running and weapons running operation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they basically North took the fall for it, but they took care of him, obviously. He ended up working for Fox and I think running for Congress. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell as far as with the Iran-Contra affair. But so getting to MENA, you'll see it was a pretty extensive operation at MENA.
Okay.
So probably the best place to start would be the drug smuggling and the gun running took it was under a man named Barry Seal. So he relocated from Louisiana in 78, in 82. In 78, he had a drug smuggling operation, which he admits. I don't think anybody denies, as you can hear in the clip, that no one's denying the drug smuggling that was going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And in 82, coincidentally, when Clinton became governor, Seal came to Arkansas. And that's when they started. He had a pretty sophisticated operation. He had what they did in Rich Mountain Aviation, which is the aviation company in MENA.
Mm-hmm.
They were retrofitting planes. What they did is they gave them like these fuel bladders that were hard to detect, so it extended their flight range. Usually that's one of the signs of drug smuggling. And he also had a trap door. He had a Loran, LORAN, long range system, long range navigation system. So where he would. What he didn't know, he didn't always have the same drop. When he dropped off, coming back, when he would drop off the drugs and the money
mm-hmm.
through the trap door, and mm-hmm. he would just fly over. He would radio in where the location was going to be, but that wasn't even determined until he determined it. So I think a lot of drug shipments would be at the same location,
mm-hmm.
and he was able to just in case any DEA agents or anybody was following him, he was able to put it, you know, to change it up all the time. And mm-hmm. they had dummy airplanes if anyone was following them, they would stack them, so it was hard to know who was doing it. It was a pretty sophisticated operation where even Seal had gotten arrested in 1984, and then he became a DEA informant. But so he had testified that he was making $600,000 to $700,000 a year trafficking arms and narcotics. So that's a little bit an overview of the guns and the drugs. And mm-hmm. now around the guns, they ended up having to manufacture illegal arms manufacturing sprung up in MENA to supply the Contras. And one of them was a company called Ivor Johnson that I believe relocated from New Jersey. But this is a very well-established company. I think mm-hmm. he actually went back to the Revolutionary War. So
I believe it's Mississippi John Hurt sings a song about his Ivor Johnson gun.
Okay, yep, that's it. So it kind of gave it some legitimacy uh-huh. that, you know, here was just an established company. But what they were doing was illegally, apparently, according to Terry Reed in his book, Compromise, to Terry Reed, I'll get into him, he was actually trained the Contras. That's another part of the operation. And he said that was to give it legitimacy. And they were manufacturing illegal weapons, but one of the most important ones, it's called a group called, it's a company called Parkometer, POM. They manufactured parking meters.
Mm-hmm.
But on the board of POM was Seth Ward, who was Webster Hubble's father-in-law.
Mm-hmm. Now, who's Webster Hubble?
Webster Hubble was, I actually worked for the Rose Law Firm with Hillary Clinton and ended up becoming the number two man in the Justice Department under the Clinton administration. And naturally, he was indicted for various fraud, I think defrauding the government. He had a whole host of, he had to resign because of his indictments. So what happened was Clinton wanted to get some of his some of his buddies a piece of the action. So Parkometer, they set up for the money laundering. They set up a bond fund called the Arkansas Development Finance Authority, ADFA. This is where a lot of the profit, because this is where a lot of the profits, Arkansas's profits from allowing this operation to go through in their state, was you have to launder the money. You have to put it somewhere. So they developed this ADFA, which was supposed to give low-interest loans to new businesses. So what happened was on the ADFA board was the Rose Law Firm, Webster Hubbell, Stevens, Jack Stevens, Inc., which according to quite a few knowledgeable people say Stevens, who was a banker, basically ran Arkansas. So the first loan from the ADFA went to Parkometer. So you had Parkometer, which was owned by Seth Ward. On the board was Webster Hubbell. Webster Hubbell was also on the board of the ADFA. So naturally, he gets the first loan. And according to one ADF insider, Larry Nichols, the loans were never paid back. Mm. So he gets the first loan to develop these legal arms for the Contras. And go ahead. I think I was going to say something. I can't remember what I was going to say on that. But I think I covered that pretty well.
That's just going back to George Bush's connection. I've heard of his connection to this before through the movie American Drug War.
And, I've never seen it.
They talked about his connection to the cocaine there. But I haven't heard about Bill Clinton being related to this before, so this is very interesting.
Yeah, if you think of what happened, Larry Nichols alleges that Clinton's campaign against George Bush was financed from all the drugs and from the 10% he got from this whole operation, which, when you think of it, is pretty amazing. When you think about, supposedly they were enemies or rivals,
mm-hmm.
and so Clinton takes that money, uses it as a vehicle to launch his presidential campaign. And a couple tidbits on the Bush-Clinton. Now you see how close these guys are. When Bush and Clinton were running against each other, their campaign managers got married. And now it goes further than that, and it goes even back to the Harrimans. You know who Avril Harriman is, right? Avril Harriman was the former governor of New York.
Okay.
If you ever see W.A. Harriman on the on your income tax statement, W.A. Harriman building, look for it next time.
Okay.
And so Harriman's father was Edward Harriman. He was a real estate magnate. So then his two sons, Avril Harriman and Bunny Harriman, Edward Harriman, his nickname was Bunny Harriman, they were two Skull and Bones members. And George Bush's senior's father, Prescott Bush, worked for the Harrimans. And they were actually, if you look up Union Bank, Fox News had actually even had done a report on it. They didn't go deep enough. But under Union Bank was a money laundering scheme, here we go again, for Fritz Thyssen, who was a German industrial magnate who was a big financer to Hitler. And his father, August Thyssen, had in World War I had lost a lot of his profits after Germany lost. So they didn't want that to happen. So they had a money laundering scheme. And if you look up Thyssen Krupp, you'll see that Krupp was another arms manufacturer in Germany. They got Thyssen Krupp elevator. I actually saw one of their vehicles pass me one day. And part of the reason is because he used this money laundering scheme through Union Bank to help protect his profits from financing Nazis, because he ended up splitting with the Nazis. And it was Prescott Bush who ran the day-to-day operations. And Union Bank was the only client was Fritz Thyssen. And it actually had its assets seized in 1942 under the Trading with the Enemy Act. Anyway, when Clinton ran for president, one of his early backers who raised, I think, $3 million at a fundraiser was Pamela Harriman, who is Avril Harriman's widow. So it's all connected. It's all basically professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
That the Bush and Clinton were never really rivals. And according to Terry Reid in his book Compromised, William Barr, I think he ended up becoming an attorney general or something he was attorney general in the Bush administration, Bush Sr. Well, Clinton was taking a little bit too much off the top, and he dressed Clinton down and told him, you know, he was, you know, basically hurting the operation and you're taking too much profits. Well, According to him, in a conversation, he said Clinton was on the fast track to be president, according to William Casey, CIA director. And if he just did things right, he would have a shot at being president. So again, it shows how things aren't what they seem in the political world.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Yeah. And I've heard of Prescott Bush before having the Nazi connection.
Right.
There.
And his boss was Harriman.
Mm-hmm.
And Bunny Harriman went on to be director of Newsweek magazine. So,
oh,
of course,
the corporate bugle.
Yeah. So that's how you see these guys go. They go in and out of politics, business, and even the news corporations.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, to think that we have a free press, which I'll get into a little bit of that too. Also, I can even bring that up right now. As I mentioned, Terry Reid. Well, this story had legs. If you go to our site, uticans4911truth.blogspot.com, I have an embedded video, part one of six. If you just click on the YouTube logo, you can go right to it and see all six parts. But we have the first part up on our site, and it was the MENA connection. Bush, Clinton, and CIA and drugs. And they had mentioned that CBS had done a story on this. A local news reporter in Arkansas had stumbled upon this. And so it was a mainstream story. But during the campaign, Time Magazine, another Skull and Bones pub, it was founded by Henry Lucas is the serial killer that Bush pardoned. The only one he ever pardoned, by the way, was Henry Lucas.
Huh.
That's something to look up if anyone's listening. But Henry Luce, again, another member of Skull and Bones, he founded Time Magazine. Well, a guy named, the guy's name escapes me, but he wrote, the title was Anatomy of a Smear Campaign on the Bush-MENA Connection, or the Clinton-MENA Connection. And he ended up, of course, siding with saying it was everything Terry Reid said was a lie. I think he took Oliver North's testimony at face. Oliver North said he didn't know him. And Terry Reid says actually his operation name at the time was John Cathy. But Time Magazine took Oliver North, convicted felon, at his word. And it turns out the editor at large of Time Magazine at the time was an old friend of Clinton back in his Oxford days. And when Clinton became president, he was like number two man at the State Department.
Wow.
So, that again, it just shows you the idea of it, that we have some type of free press, that everything is all separate. It's just ridiculous.
Uh-huh. A lot of you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours going on.
Yeah, definitely. And it shows you that at the lower levels, if you watch that video, you'll see, it was just a freshman reporter had stumbled upon what was going down in MENA, and but by the time it got to the upper level, that's where the big guns come out, and that's where they can kind of squash a story.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what what methods they used to squash the story? In particular?
I think basically it was the guy's name, Richard Behar, his name was. That was it. By Time Magazine, when you bring the big guns out of Time Magazine, then everyone kind of backs off.
It's kind of like the Popular Science going after 9/11.
Right, right. And Popular Science is again, you can see how it all kind of relates. Popular Science is a Hearst publication. And Hearst was actually, Hearst Publications was known as the founders of yellow journalism. And it was they were big backers of Hitler back in the day. It's actually Hearst publication. The reason why hemp is illegal is because of Hearst public. They had a big hand in that because they had paper and they would they had made a new technology had come to make hemp production of paper cheaper, and that was a threat to Hearst's empire. So he started the whole campaign with almost the Reefer Madness type of thing. It actually started with Hearst.
Hmm.
So it's just nothing. The names don't even change pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I want to mention about why they chose MENA, Arkansas, when they had determined that they were going to fund the Contras illegally now in their arms. I think the drugs might have come after, but they had to fund them. And they also had to train them. And that's where Terry Reid comes in. Terry Reid was a pilot, ended up working for the CIA because they had to train. They ended up training not Americans, but mostly Salvadorians or Nicaraguans. They had to train them in these nighttime and low-level drop shipments of weapons. So they trained them in about 12 miles, I think, north or south of Mina. They had they built a 2,700 foot airstrip to train these Contra rebels. Mm-hmm. So what they did, but when they decided that this is how what they were going to do, they had to pick the right location, and they couldn't have it as to like one of the coastal or perimeter states because there'd be too much activity going on there with the Coast Guard, the DEA. So they needed a rural pop, you know, they needed a rural area, mm-hmm. and they needed it to be underpopulated, but they also needed the right political climate. Mm-hmm. And basically what they needed was a banana republic. As like the CIA, if you know, that's where they tend to work best at, is a banana republic, where people would look the other way. So in Arkansas, which is very underdeveloped, mm-hmm. any activity that came in there, it was actually heralded as when they started bringing in planes and the airport in Mena, Arkansas, is like a state-of-the-art airport. It had high security. It's also one of the most difficult locations to get to in the 48 contiguous 48 states because of the mountain regions, and that actually ended up becoming that. It also had the benefit when it was actually similar to Nicaragua. So it had the benefit of training there. Wow. So everything kind of came together, and that's why they chose Mena. And it turns out, now this gets into maybe a little bit of conspiracy theory, but it's always been alleged that Bill Clinton was actually an illegitimate Rockefeller. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a little bit to that. They say that the Rockefellers have owned Arkansas for quite a number of years. Winthrop Rockefeller was the governor for quite a while. And when Clinton's mother always claimed that Clinton didn't go to full term. But he weighed like 9 or 10 pounds, so he obviously went to full term. The problem with that is William Blythe, who was alleged to be his father 9 months before, was in the service, so he wasn't even in the country. And this guy, naturally, Clinton's not even born, and he dies. And apparently there was some car accident. William Blythe died, and it was a little bit suspicious. Mm-hmm. So apparently Clinton, when he would go to school, I mean, this guy went to the most prestigious schools there are. He went to Georgetown, Oxford, and came back to Yale for law school. And during his breaks, he would always come back and see Winthrop Rockefeller. And apparently Winthrop Rockefeller is a guiding light in his career. And, of course, Clinton eventually succeeded him as governor. Mm-hmm. So that's a theory that's been I think it has some validity to it. But anyway, so they had to know they could trust Clinton. Mm-hmm. And another one that I think it has a lot of merit, that Clinton was never really a draft dodger. What he was under Operation Chaos, was actually a spy, keeping an eye on the anti-war movement. Wow. And I think that makes a lot of, that one really, I think, has a lot of, makes a lot of validity to it. And I think, Clinton had to have done something that they knew they could count on him for. Mm-hmm. And I think if he really was keeping tabs on the anti-war movement, I think, that gives him a little bit of a CIA background. Mm-hmm. And another little tidbit, it just never ends with these guys, is Hale Boggs, who was a member of the Warren Commission. Later on, he ended up having misgivings about the single bullet theory, and he said that Hoover was a thug and he was blackmailing members of Congress to accept the Warren Commission report. Mm-hmm. Well, naturally, his plane goes down, and he was supposed to go to Alaska, and his plane was never found, but it was none other than Bill Clinton who took him to the airport.
Wow.
So, there's uh-huh. things that I'm just pointing out, things in Clinton's background,
right,
that would make him the kind of guy to
suspect.
Trust, right, or amenable to the operation. You have to know you're going to trust this guy, and he's going to carry through this operation. And I think there's enough, I think if you take all those things into consideration, maybe the Rockefeller one is a little more difficult, although I think it has some merit. But I mean, I'm reasonably confident saying that he was not a draft dodger. Mm-hmm. And like I said, the Hale box thing, I think it was just to get your blood. You know, you obviously you don't actually kill someone, but you get a little blood on your hands and know that you're okay with this type of thing. And so I think Clinton fit the bill. So like I said, everything for this Iran-Contra affair, the MENA connection was all into place for it. Mm-hmm. I said the location was right, the political climate was right. Mm-hmm. Arkansas would always things that they couldn't get rid of anywhere else, I think nuclear waste, that type of thing, mm-hmm. would be pawned off to Arkansas, and it's a little banana republic is really what it was, and that's why a lot of those operations were carried out there. And as you heard, Clinton didn't even deny it happened. Mm-hmm. But then you would get into, does Clinton know? First off, you've got this. What broke the Iran-Contra affair was a plane getting supposedly shot down. Mm-hmm. And one of the survivors, Eugene Hassenfuss, I believe that's how you pronounce his name, he shouldn't have had a parachute, but he did. And he was captured, and the Sandinistas paraded this guy, and they just happened to have some documents on there, and that's what showed that we were funding the Contras illegally. And it turns out that his plane left MENA.
Oh, wow.
That's where, and that happened, I believe, in 1986.
Well, that really helps pull it together.
Yeah, it really does. And what's funny, though, is Clinton claims he has no knowledge of the MENA operations till 1988. Now, in 1986, a plane was shot down, leaving, you know, it was shot down over Nicaraguan airspace, but it had left MENA. Mm-hmm. Now, how could Clinton even now, at that point, how could Clinton even claim he had no knowledge? But you have people on record who actually testified saying Clinton knew at least in 1984 that they were actually at the MENA, Arkansas airport with him in 1984. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, you know, I mean, He certainly had it's just hard to imagine he could not possibly know what was going on. And this is Arkansas, for crying out loud. You've got these drug and gun running operations, you've got training of the Contra, you know, training mm-hmm. of these pilots there, and you have no idea. But again, then it goes to even further, as I mentioned, that you have people alleging that his ADFA was just basically a money laundering scheme for according to Terry Reid, he was taking, and Barry Seal also had said he was getting 10% was, you know, for allowing it to go through Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And they had actually audited the ADFA, and they said, we're talking big money, not just from the bond funds that they were offering, but they said they some of those funds came from unknown origins. So, I mean, if you tie it together, mm-hmm. I think you could safely say that Bill Clinton knew and profited both politically and economically mm-hmm. from allowing this operation to go through.
Mm-hmm. Do you mind if we open the telephone to callers?
Yeah. I'd like to mention some of the MENA-related deaths, if you want to do that first.
Sure.
Or after. Okay.
Sure.
So there was one airline mechanic, I believe, who was willing to testify, because they were also they had extra planes. They were changing tail numbers on some of these planes. They were taking tail numbers from other planes, but in other parts of the country, and they had to know that they would never cross. So that one of them had seen that they had done something with the tail numbers. He was willing to testify, apparently, and then he died. He supposedly committed suicide by drinking mouthwash. Then you had her name was Judy Gibb, I think her name was, something like that. She was a penthouse pet and a call girl who was going to testify about the drugs going on in MENA. She died of a fire. And then probably one there. This one has, there's a video out about it and a book. The book is called The Boys on the Tracks, and the video is The Obstruction of Justice, The MENA Connection. It was a two teenagers, Kevin Ives and Don Henry, and they were found on railroad tracks, and they got run over by a train. Well, The original Clinton's medical examiner was a guy named Fahmy Malik, and he had originally ruled a suicide when it came out that the boys were just going out to do some hunting that night. And when it was originally ruled a suicide, they said, well, these boys weren't suicidal. Then it said it was accidental because they were smoking too much marijuana. And what they did is they found out that he had tested their urine, not their blood. So he changed back to a suicide. Well, Fahmy Malik had a whole host of very questionable rulings on certain deaths. And there was actually ended up being a pretty big issue for Clinton because there was a lot of protests. There's a group called Vomit, Victims of Malik's Incredible Testimony. Malik was not a very well-liked guy in Arkansas, and Clinton always protected him, actually wanted him to have a raise. Jocelyn Elder, who also protected him, who ended up becoming Surgeon General of the U.S. So Malik had ruled. Linda Ives, Kevin Ives' mother, had never accepted this changing ruling of Malik. And they end up having the bodies exhumed, and six pathologists looked at their bodies, and they determined that I think Kevin Ives was clubbed in the back of the head, Don Henry was stabbed, and that they determined there was a lot of red blood, I guess, which indicates that he had been dead for a while. So they were dead before they were on the railroad tracks, and even the conductors had seen a green tarp. They were blowing the whistle. The boys hadn't moved. They saw a green tarp, and after they had unfortunately run them over, the tarp was missing. So Linda Ives is still – I actually was in contact with her a little bit through an email, and to this day she's still trying to get justice for her son and her friend. And it didn't even stop there. There were eight deaths in relation. So there were some witnesses. Apparently there are other boys – they stumbled upon a drug running operation going down in Arkansas. It wasn't Mena, but it was close by. And there were other people around that they couldn't catch them. So there were about eight witnesses to what happened that night, and they all died within 3 years. And I guess only one of the crimes was solved. So, I mean, it's hard to believe what happened. But again, if anyone's interested, I mean, this is a horrible story. What would happen to these boys and other young men? I think there might have been some older people too, but they had some information on what happened in Mena to these boys. Mm-hmm. And it's chronicled in Boys on the Track or Obstruction of Justice. So that's another as when you see like supposed debunkers of the Clinton body count, they might bring up Vince Foster or Ron Brown, but they don't even want to tread on this one, because you got a mother who'd been fighting to get these bodies exhumed and still fighting to this day to get it classified as a murder, not an accidental death or a suicide. Mm-hmm. So. But okay, if you want to open it to questions, if anyone's got any calls.
Sure. If you're out there listening, you have any questions, comments, concerns, you'd like to reach us here in the station, telephone number here is area code 315-859-4200. That's 315-859-4200. And have you ever heard of Carol Quigley?
Yes, that's Clinton's mentor.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So. He wrote Tragedy and Hope, was that his big one? And basically he said...
That was his big one, all right, as 1,300 pages.
Yeah, it was huge. But I think he had said that there was a ruling elite. And I think it wasn't so much his problem, wasn't so much with them, as that more that they were in the shadows, I think, is one of his problems with it. Not so much that I don't think he was had a problem with their goals or the fact that they existed. Yeah, that was Clinton's mentor, I think, at Georgetown, right?
I think so. I knew it was his mentor. Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was Georgetown.
I think it was Georgetown University. And I want to mention, too, that again, you know, they had mainstream reports, but you had an IRS agent, Bill Duncan, and Russell Welch, who was, I believe, a state police officer in Arkansas. They had a 3,000-page report on what happened in MENA. They had 35 indictments of money laundering, and they presented to a grand jury, and nothing ever came of it. And it turns out Russell Welch was actually almost died from military-grade anthrax poisoning.
Wow.
And now where have you heard that before? After 9/11.
Right.
I mean, they don't change anything. And, of course, I don't know if I have to research the Russell Welch thing. I don't know if that case was ever solved. But, I mean, how long did it take them to find supposedly the guy who had done the anthrax poisoning? And, of course, he committed suicide.
Well, it was...
It took him years, right? I mean, it was just recently that they solved that case.
Right, but Francis Boyle came up. He was one of the first people who witnessed... He's been studying biological weapons since the 80s. And so when this happened, he read the article in the Times, and by the description that they had given, he decided that it had to be from U.S. military, that it couldn't have been something from overseas.
Right.
And he contacted the FBI, and they didn't want to hear from him. He was a guest of mine maybe 3 years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he probably made the point. I mean, how many suspects could there have possibly been with this highly specialized, you know, this highly specialized grade of anthrax that, you know, not many people are handling this? How could it possibly have taken so long? Like, well, obviously they didn't even want to act they didn't want to admit, apparently, that it came from the U.S.
And he, Francis Boyle, had told them which military base should be suspect.
Was it Fort Detrick?
I'm pretty sure it was. Yeah. And then he said that the FBI said, well, we're working closely with them to figure out what's going on.
Well, that also brings into the whole 9/11 thing. If, you know, that was part of the whole terror campaign, and it came right from the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to beg the question, did the attacks come from the U.S., the actual 9/11 attacks, which they did. But, I mean, it just I keep forgetting to mention the anthrax, because it does tie in with 9/11, because mm-hmm. I think you had the Manhattan attacks, the Pentagon, and Shanksville, and those were terrifying, but it became even not everybody, you know, just about everybody has a mailbox. So mm-hmm. when you put the anthrax through the mail, then it becomes, the terror really starts to hit home. And again, that came from the U.S. And I believe, you might remember, who ended up, a couple offices of congressmen ended up being targeted.
Oh,
was Patrick Leahy?
I don't remember the names, but one of the guys who was targeted was the one holdout against the Patriot Act.
The Patriot Act, which had obviously been prepared before 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
The more you research it, the more you see how things never even change, you know. And sometimes they don't even change a script at all, like with the anthrax. It happened, you know, they used it apparently on Russell Welch,
mm-hmm.
and then they used it to terrorize America.
Right.
And it never changes. And, you know, I mentioned the Harrimans and how these if you look at I call it like the, you know, you have the 6 degrees of separation. Well, you have so much ties in. You have like the 4 or 5 degrees of Nazi separation,
mm-hmm.
because it wasn't that long ago. So much ties back in with the Nazis, because, I mean, if you look at anything with any doings with George Bush, will tie in with the Nazis, with his father. And he also had George Bush had some things like what's his name, Fred? Frederick Frick, I believe his name, William. William Farish, William Stamps Farish, he worked for Standard Oil. Standard Oil had a treasonous deal with IG Farben to supply them with patents that they couldn't do on their own. IG Farben was a German chemical manufacturer that you couldn't launch World War, that Germany couldn't have launched the war without IG Farben.
Mm-hmm.
They had patents with Standard Oil. William Farish kind of took the fall for that. And he ended up dying in shame, you know. But his, and then his son died, but his grandson, William Farish III, ended up inheriting the money he made from financing the Nazis. And William Farish III ended up becoming George Bush's senior financial advisor or financial, or I think he oversaw the Bush fortune. So there's another Nazi connection. You had, there was an Ethel Corporation, which also supplied, against the State Department's wishes, supplied the Nazis with, I think, a certain type of fuel they needed to launch the war. Mm-hmm. And it was underwritten through Brown Brothers Harriman, which is Harriman Bank again. So, so much goes right to the, so much is tied in with the Nazis. And even the JFK assassination, Ellen Dulles, who basically headed the Warren Commission. When Hitler was installed chancellor, Ellen Dulles was at that meeting. And because he was a Wall Street lawyer for, I believe, Schroeder Bank or one of the – it was at Schroeder Bank, and Dulles was a lawyer for a firm representing Schroeder Bank. So he was actually at the meeting when Hitler was installed chancellor. It was also Dulles who was who was instrumental in Operation Paperclip, where we took all the Nazi scientists over. And the CIA, when the CIA was founded – it brought over, it's called Galen Org, was Reinhard Galen. He was the head of a Nazi spies for the Eastern Front in Russia, and he had a lot of his information. A lot of the information we got about Russia came from Galen, and we brought his whole operation right over into in the CIA. And Galen got a lot of his information from torturing and murdering over 4 million Soviets. Wow. And so what he did is now the Soviet Union was just ravaged after World War II. They lost like 25 million people. It was just in shambles. And Galen had basically what we did was – so we were – World War II, we were having uneasy allies with Russia, and obviously we're fighting the Germans. Right after World War II ended, it flipped. And we became allies with the Germans, and Russia became our enemy.
Right.
Like, and no one seemed to notice that this quick flip. And a lot of the intelligence, now Galen had cut a deal with probably Ellen Dulles, who was in Switzerland and obviously had contact. He got himself captured by the Americans, knowing nothing was going to happen. If he was captured by the Russians, he would have been hung. And it was Ellen Dulles who was instrumental in bringing Galen over. And he said, well, he works for us now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the Nazi ties are just, are unbelievable. And another, John McCloy, who was on the Warren Commission, if you remember when the Olympics with Jesse Owens, I think it was the 36 Olympics, where they were in Germany, and that was supposed to be a big deal. And, Hitler was upset. His whole master race thing, and Jesse Owens and had won gold medals, and it was John McCloy was in the press box with Hitler that time when they were during the Olympics. And it's a pretty famous thing with Hitler being upset, like in the crowd, when Jesse Owens won. And it was John McCloy who, I think after the Nuremberg trials, he had argued for leniency with a lot of German war criminals. So there's another member of the Warren Commission with some Nazi ties. Uh-huh. And it's funny is I think it's probably before the Warren Commission came out. Walter Cronkite, the alleged most trusted man in America, had said we must put our faith in the Warren Commission. And Mark Lane, who wrote the book Rush to Judgment, I think in 1966, that really started, that really kind of put the screws to the Warren Commission, where he studied the Warren Commission and pointed out all the problems with it. He said, he became a lecturer in colleges, and whenever he mentioned Walter Cronkite saying we must put our faith in the Warren Commission, he said most of the people in the audience would laugh. Uh-huh. It's just, the idea that, now, how could Walter Cronkite not know some of the, who he's talking about when you're talking about Ellen Dulles? How could he not be privy to certain information about Dulles? And so, again, there's just another example of how, especially at the highest levels, you can't trust the mainstream media. They'll give you little bits, And like I say, even Fox had mentioned the Prescott Bush Nazi connect, but they didn't really delve deep into it, and they never said they might have put it on their website, but they never put it on TV, where most of the people, that's where, you know, people don't read that much. You know, you can bury a story on page 28, but they never really reported it in any depth. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, you wouldn't expect them to, but it, I mean, they do throw, you know, they do give you a little bits, but they don't really go far enough with them. But, you know, so you can get a little bit from the mainstream press, but in the end, you can't really trust them. Mm-hmm. And that's why they could never do all these things if they didn't know that they controlled the press. This would if we had a free press, all these things would never be occurring.
Hmm. So when are you writing your book, Herb?
I'll tell you, it would be so huge. I couldn't even. I have trouble sometimes writing articles for the OD. You know, it's hard to. I'd imagine hopefully the best books have already been written. But of course, you know, that brings up that kind of brings up something called, you know, since we got time, a little thing known as like controlled opposition, mm-hmm. which is, that's another way they cover things up, mm-hmm. by actually controlling, you know, so you follow these Pied Piper, these Pied Pipers end up leading you nowhere. Mm-hmm. And then when they get on TV, they end up giving these more spurious theories, and they do like a horrible job with people they should be able to handle no problem. And so it's really difficult to find really good information. It really is on any of these topics. And you'll find someone and you think, wow, he's really putting the screws to these. He's got it nailed. And then you find out then he doesn't go far enough, or let's say at big moments he introduces some crazier theories. And so it's you know, you just have to use your common sense, and it's just not. You know, it's not easy to research all these things. And I know Thomas Jefferson said the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. Mm-hmm. And I think nowadays it's even harder to see through all this. But it's, you know, I guess I do this because I don't think, you know, in the end, it's not, I don't know if it's going to make any difference. But the best chance you have of doing anything is local, because I can come on and say this. But if you have a guy like Jesse Ventura, who's supposedly the conspiracy theorist and, you know, fighting the establishment, well, then he gets a guest shot for Larry King on CNN. Mm-hmm. So, you know, how can you really trust Jesse Ventura? I personally don't think so. Mm-hmm. I saw his 9/11 special. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. and he does give some decent information, but then he presents it in such a way that you can't take it seriously. It's so hokey. I watched one of his shows the other night, and it's just pretty childish at certain points, and that's done by design. And there, so when you throw something credible, you're not really going to pay attention, because it's cloaked in just, you know, in this nonsense, in the way he presents it, and with his investigators, and so. Yeah, I wish I could write like a good book on this, because there are some, you know, but it's tough to it takes a lot of time to sort through everything. Mm-hmm. But I do think this the MENA Arkansas is I think you can just learn so much from it. Mm-hmm. You can see how this the left right battle is fake. Mm-hmm. You can see how Bush and, you know, it really makes you wonder about if the elections are just manufactured consent, if they're already determined. You can see how both the Democrats and the Republicans were up to their eyeballs in the Iran-Contra affair. Mm-hmm. And you can see how nothing ever really came out of it. Mm-hmm. Again, the boys in the tracks, however, they were able to stop the grand jury, even though you had pathologists ruling these boys were murdered beforehand. Nothing came out of it. No, Oliver North came out of it unscathed. Mm-hmm. You know, he had to fall on his sword a little bit. Nothing happened to him. Nothing happened to Bush. Nothing happened to Clinton. Mm-hmm. You know, nothing happens out of it, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And
anywhere in your research about the Iran-Contra, did you come across connections to the School of the Americas, Fort Benning, Georgia, where they train people in South America in different military and torture techniques?
No, I haven't seen that yet.
Okay, just curious.
Well,
when you said nobody gets, ever...
held accountable.
Yeah, held accountable for things like that. I was asked to give a talk about the School of the Americas a couple of years ago, and I was doing a little research and found out that in 2007, Chiquita was the first American company to be tried under the U.S. Terrorism Act.
Wow.
Or Anti-Terrorism Act, rather. And because they had hired different guerrilla military from down there to assassinate Union organizers and the Chiquita Banana Corporation, and they were found guilty and charged $25 million, but no one was ever held accountable for the murders.
Well, what's amazing, too, is as we research this, is a name, believe it or not, that comes up who was actually... They were watching him for drug smuggling was Don Tyson of Tyson Foods, Tyson Chicken. And Tyson is actually stationed at their headquarters are in Arkansas. So, I mean, it just boggles your mind how, you know, companies and people, you think, oh, it's a kind of, you know, mm-hmm. we're supposed to think these companies are respectable. And, yeah, his name came up as he was being watched.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the Clintons basically associate with criminals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's one of the guys who was the Arkansas bond daddy, they call it. I think that's what they called him. He was also involved in the ADFA. He was like underwriting the bonds for the ADFA, which is where the money laundering went. He was arrested for trafficking in drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Clinton got arrested for drug use and possibly trafficking. I believe that's Clinton's half brother.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, when they had left, when Clinton left office, he had pardoned like 178 people or something. It was a bit of a deal at the time. All these people that the Clintons had pardoned. It's unbelievable. The criminal types that these guys are associated with,
mm-hmm.
and
what about Waco, Texas, and what happened there during Clinton's time?
Oh, that was another one where they just there was even if Koresh had been molesting those kids, that wasn't even the charge,
right?
That was irrelevant at that point. So
And as Bill Hicks says, you don't see Bradley tanks taking down Catholic churches.
Yeah, that's a whole nother thing. Waco's one. If you look at the Clinton body count, there's 110 deaths associated with. Now that doesn't mean it was all Clinton, and some of them overlap with Bush again, naturally. But there are just too many deaths to just pass off as a coincidence. And, you know, the boys on the tracks, I think, is... And whether Clinton actually supervised that, there's allegations that it was actually the Arkansas police that actually murdered these kids. But Clinton had basically... by the time Clinton had left Arkansas, I think he had appointed every judge. They had that state in their back pocket. So, you know, he had people that were very amenable to his cause. And like I said, there were people that ended up speaking out, like Officer L.D. Brown, who I think he's in the video Clinton Chronicles. And, you know, he had put Clinton and Mina. He said Clinton knew about it. He knew about Boyd. He knew about the whole thing. You know, so there were people that did end up speaking out that didn't get killed.
Mm-hmm.
And there were quite a few that, like, ended up... the gangland, almost gangland style murders that went on in Arkansas, it's unbelievable. Unsolved murders of one was Jerry Parks, who was a head of security for Clinton, and apparently he had some files, and he was talking about blowing the whistle on some of the things, and supposedly when Vince Foster committed suicide, he said, "I'm a dead man," and he was just he was on a desolate road, was just another car came and just gunned him down, and that was never solved. I mean, I guess I could recommend some books. If anyone was interested. One is Compromised by Terry Reed and John Cummings. Terry Reed is the, as I mentioned, he trained pilots in Mena, Arkansas, and Nella for the dropments they would be doing of weapons. And he's the one that Richard Behar wrote Anatomy of a Smear Campaign, and he ended up suing Behar for libel. I guess the CIA asset had testified, and he said that the article smacks of disinformation. A couple more is Hillary and Bill. It was written by Victor Thorne. So you have he had a trilogy: Hillary and Bill, the Sex Volume, the Drugs Volume, and the Murder Volume. So Sex Volume is okay. That's where he did actually quite a bit on Winthrop Rockefeller and William Blythe. The Drugs Volume is very good, and it gets into Mena, it gets into the Iran-Contra, it gets into the ADFA and Whitewater and some of those others, and the Murder Volume again, it covers the Clinton body count, it covers the boys on the tracks, it covers Vince Foster, Ron Brown, and he actually is his theory that the Monica Lewinsky was a wag the dog event to cover up for the Ron Brown, what he says was the Ron Brown murder. Apparently, Ron Brown's plane went into the side of a mountain, and I don't think they did an autopsy, but people that have seen his x-ray, it said it looked like there was actually a bullet was in the top of Ron Brown's head. And Ron Brown, you know, was saying he wasn't going to go down. He was going to cut a deal, and he wasn't going to go down with the Clintons. I mean, it can't all be a coincidence. Mm-hmm. And there's just too many mistakes and too many unsolved, mysterious deaths, suicides, beatings. I thought I've read a lot in my research, but I'll tell you, reading this this Murder Volume is just unbelievable. And The Boys on the Tracks is probably the most sickening of them all. You know, I mean, If Vince Foster was murdered, which most people feel, you know, or a lot of people feel he was, Foster was in that loop. I mean, it's terrible, but, you know, but when you got innocent boys who just happened to stumble upon something and are just executed and put on train tracks, and then you know, other teenagers or youngsters who are witnesses are dead within, mm-hmm. you know, It's just unbelievable. It's just, I don't say. I mean, it's just hard to believe when you're reading it. You can't even believe it, you know. And even if you think you've seen everything, but you just haven't. It's mm-hmm. just basically everything we've ever been taught happens in other countries happens here, mm-hmm. and that's just the simplest way to look at it, I think.
It's a good way to look at it. Yeah. Good way to summarize it. For the listeners out there who would like to revisit my interview with Francis Boyle about the anthrax scare, you can go to radio4all.net and type in The Ringer. That's the name of this program, and it'll come up with all of my different programs. And down toward the bottom, you'll see Anthrax Scare of 2001 originated in the U.S. government lab.
And apparently Russell Welch, who was a police officer investigator on the Mena case in Arkansas, was also almost killed with a anthrax poisoning from a military base again. Mm-hmm. So it just things don't change.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for coming on this morning. Any other things you'd like to we didn't cover?
I think I pretty much covered it all. Again, hopefully anyone listening, I'd recommend go to my site. It's mine and Andy Senior's, who was a DJ here at one time. It's utikinsfor911truth.blogspot.com, and you can see the link. We have the embedded video to the Mena connection. I think it's also subtitled Bush CIA and Bush Clinton and CIA drug smuggling, and it's a 6-part episode. If you just click on YouTube, you can watch all 6 episodes, and I think it'd be very informative.
And since it's getting toward that time of year again, what would you give as your feelings towards the flu vaccinations?
According to my wife, who was a nurse, most of the flu vaccinations are actually last year's flu anyway. So, and it's mutated so quickly. So at best, she feels at best they're worthless. At worst, they could be potentially harmful and possibly causing autoimmune diseases. And I don't know if you've ever had anyone on your show about vaccinations, but I can recommend someone for you who's actually local.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, I'll talk to you later. I'll show you.
Francis Boyle spoke a little bit about that, being the biological weapons person, and he advised against flu shots. And I've had other Michael Hansen from the Consumer. He's from Consumers Union that does Consumer Reports. He's a head research associate there. He doesn't take vaccination shots himself. And there's another Dr. Pustai is also against the vaccinations.
There are many people, and I know even Jenny McCarthy said it, that there are possible links of vaccinations to autism. So that's something I want to look into. But my wife actually knows more about it than I do, and I'll locally, his name is Larry Trivieri.
Okay.
And, oh, you know Larry?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I know of him.
He actually edited, I have a book on alternative healing that he's edited.
Oh.
So I know he was on Bill Keeler's show talking about he thought the swine flu scare was just that, was a hoax. And I know, I think he would probably come on your show and talk about vaccines, and he could speak more to it than I could.
Great.
It's just hard to keep up with everything, and, you know, it's...
Yeah.
But that's another part of it. And I believe the Rockefellers have a big hand in medicine, which is never a good sign when the Rockefellers are involved.
So thank you so much for coming on this morning.
Thanks for having me again.
And